Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and we're back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricky on the board. The rainy morning in Chicago. A rainy day, and we're not Georgia though. That was a rainy night. We're a rainy day, at least so far. We'll give you the whole scoop. We do traffic, weather, and sports. Meteorologist Ricky. I don't know if he's a meteorologist much, but he's going to do the best he can.
That's right.
But he knows it's raining because he's wet.
I know.
It's easy. Is it raining outside? Well, I'm wet. Yes, it's raining outside. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning. Yeah, it was the rainy night in Georgia was about 5-6 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. I told you we had one of our listeners from Ohio has a friend in Western North Carolina up on a hill. The house is a little wet, but okay. But the road to the house is toast. So I don't know if you'd rather be caught up or down.
Well, you need an all-terrain vehicle then.
Yeah.
Hey, I have two questions to start out here. So,
you know what they say? Ask me no questions. They tell me no. Ask me no questions. I'll tell you no lies.
Tell me lies. Yeah. The first one is because when I drove back and forth to Nashville, I just rented a car. And why do you have two car keys? Why does a car have two keys?
I would think because you have one in the house in case the other one gets lost.
Yeah. So, for years, I have wondered, when you rent a car, why they give you both keys and they band them together so that you can't separate them.
You sure one's not, well, if you, one's not
so
a door?
So, if you lose one, you lose them both.
Now, I'm going to show my age here. You sure one's not a trunk key? Or we don't have those anymore.
No, they're the same. They're the same key.
I'm hoping they have another one there.
I wouldn't know, but if you it doesn't matter if I'm 500 miles away, but I've always thought that was kind of weird.
You know what it costs? And, you have to get a key today with these newer vehicles. Not that I have one.
Yeah, hundreds of dollars.
You got to give the VIN number to the dealer. There's only a couple places that'll actually make you a car key.
Oh yeah, well no, they're all magnetic, computerized, whatever it is, whatever they're coded, so that it's specific to your car. But I always thought that was weird. The second question is, when I look on the channel guide on my television, and it says MLB Baseball, what does MLB stand for?
It should be Major League Baseball, one would think.
So on my channel guide, it's Major League Baseball.
Major League Baseball? That's weird. I've never seen that.
Yeah. MLB Baseball is what you get, right? So doesn't that then mean Major League Baseball?
I guess it's opposed to Minor League Baseball, but then again, I don't...
That would be MILB Baseball.
Or Triple-A Baseball, in which case you wouldn't have a baseball in there.
Well, then you're fine if it says Triple-A.
You do realize
if it said NL baseball or AL baseball, but that they're kind of interchangeable now, so that doesn't matter.
So
this is sort of like when you see a sign at a gas station or something that says ATM machine. What's the ATM stand for?
Yeah, automated. What is
so? Your automated teller machine.
Yeah. Well, now when you go on the road, you do realize what you're turning into.
I'm afraid to know what I'm turning into.
Some combination of Andy Rooney and Charles Kuralt.
I suppose, yeah.
Now, do you have the whole family in Montana like Charles Kuralt?
No.
Do you have a whole family or just have the girlfriend? He had, I think he had a family, didn't he?
I don't know Charles Kuralt's story. It's been so long since I've given a thought to the name Charles Kuralt.
Oh, I know, but he went around the country in those days, a Winnebago, and you know, just talked to people and got his, you know, his foot on the ground or his ear on the ground, and which is somewhat what I think, which a lot of politicians should do these days.
Wouldn't that be interesting? I know. You know, I don't know if other morning shows do it. I know Fox's morning show plants somebody in a restaurant to hang out and talk to the people there, the local people. I think that's pretty, you know, fairly well rigged to be mostly conservative points of view, but it isn't always. And I don't watch it very much, so I don't know much about it other than I've stumbled across and seen it, whereas I haven't seen that, like, on Morning Joe or anything. But, boy, don't you think that, I don't know how much appetite there would be for that, but as a way to sort of get away from the bubble and start getting the regular person's opinion, couldn't we use that kind of an approach again for, you know, for a news segment here and there?
Well, it's sort of what we do. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, the network news, just get, you know, get out and talk to people because they're all so damn disconnected from the rest of us. It's beyond silly.
Well,
they just don't know.
I don't know why you have people writing articles on economics don't know anything about economics. It'd be like if I started writing a column on law. What's the point? I'm not a lawyer. I don't know anything about law. Well, a little bit, but not that much. I know something about...
Oh, you have your areas of expertise.
Well, I could make a stab at securities law as it affects people in the business, because I've seen that work or not work. But, I you know, we start talking about any other kind of law.
You'll talk some about antitrust law. You're conversant there.
There's a couple spots, but I don't know if you'd want me in front of the judge for you. Necessarily.
Yeah, you can get me talking about transactions and transaction law, because I lived it for so long.
Well, I find, Kevin, when you sit down, especially, you have to figure out where you're going. I talk to the guys down here. I meet a couple nights a week. A little bit about the market, some about politics, a lot about Chicago, because guys have investments here. But if you go to and I haven't been there in a long time, which is really kind of disappointing. There's a really nice, well, it's not real nice, but it's a restaurant that's been here forever in Chicago called Club Lago. And for my purposes, and probably for yours as well, in terms of you have some of the same traits I do, that or maybe the bar over at Martin Anthony's is the best bar to go to. Because everybody on that block, Club Lago, is the block is attorneys that are not, you know, the $650 an hour merger guys. They're regular attorneys that, like, represent policemen and other people like that, regular people. And there's a bunch of architects there. Some of them are building schools and some other stuff. And if you can't sit down there and talk to the person next to you and learn something very valuable, I mean, there's something wrong with you. It's amazing how much you learn just by talking to people. If you talk to the right people. I mean, but even so, no matter who you talk to, even if you're somewhere in the burbs and you're talking to, it's interesting, so you don't want to say anything good about yourself, but...
Tom, it's also if you ask the right questions. Well, you ask questions that get people to talk shop, basically. Oh yeah. And that's, you know, that's really what you want to do. You can ask about something very specific, a specific case or anything like that, but... Once you get people talking about what they do and how they go about doing it, you really do learn a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that was something I learned when I was covering basketball. There's a lot of direct questions you can ask a coach, for example, and you'll get an answer, but it's kind of a cliche answer, and you know, there's not a lot of information in there. But if you can ask them the question that gets them to start talking a little, you know, about how they do, what their thought processes are, how they go about doing things, man, you get a long answer. You get a really good long answer.
We had a years and years ago, I mean, a lady who used to be a contributor on the show died in the accident this year and still bumming me out. Robin and I, way back in the day, were boyfriend, girlfriend. So we go to this wedding, and she's in the wedding. This is, God, how many years ago? And she's sitting up at the head table, and the girl next to her says, gee, where's your boyfriend? Isn't he pissed? He's sitting by himself. She goes, he doesn't care. If he's sitting next to a truck driver, he's happy talking trucks. If he's sitting next to a doctor, he'll talk doctors. He doesn't care. As long as he's sitting next to somebody, he'll talk to him. You know what? Some of that's the truth. Yeah, but I'd be happy talking to somebody.
Yeah, it is. And another way to look at it. So that's your story about talking to everybody. Mine was having a junior high age daughter who, after spending a weekend with me, went home to her mom's. And so they're talking. He said, yeah, Dad is so embarrassing.
Why?
Alice says to him, what do you mean? And she says, he talks to everybody.
Well, you know, to me, that's how you learn.
And when you're a junior high girl, that's embarrassing. Your dad's supposed to shut up and just be.
Oh, God, yeah. Be like a stuffed animal in the corner.
Yeah. So, hey, he talks to everybody. That was so funny to hear that story from,
well, that was,
from my ex.
That was, and you and I can maneuver around, so I guess we don't have any excuse, but that Roosevelt's big deal, because obviously he couldn't go out much because he was crippled. Crippled, and I guess that's not the term to use these days, but he couldn't
walk. Because he had a handicap.
Yes. He had a lower body that didn't work, and he had an upper body that he was strong as a horse, right? He'd hold himself up for like an hour speeching, was giving speeches, but anyway, he'd have people come to the White House. Some days he would have somebody there every 20 to 30 minutes. And this industry, that industry, and an absolute razor mind that he didn't forget any of these conversations. I'm sure he forgot the names of the people, but he didn't forget any of the conversations. That's how he learned about everything. That's how he ended up with an atomic bomb. They scheduled Enrico Fermi into the Oval Office because nobody in the Army or Navy thought the guy was a crackpot. The reason why we had an atomic bomb is because Roosevelt listened to the guy and goes, you got to be kidding me. You can actually do that? And the guy goes, yeah. Because the other guys are going to do it if you don't do it first. That's literally how they tried to go through the Navy. And this is talk about the Admiral, Enrico Fermi, sitting in the guy's office, the Admiral's office, and the captain comes in and says, there's some WAP here wanting to talk to you about some crazy invention. That was his introduction to Enrico Fermi. And the Admiral gave him the short shift, like 5 minutes, and it turns out Roosevelt's wife heard about it from somebody and said, I'll get you in to talk to Franklin. And she did. And that's how the atomic industry was born. Can you imagine that?
I mean, it's crazy, and it's crazy how people are so willing to dismiss things, have a lack of vision for it.
Now, the question is either person running now willing to talk to people outside of the government 6 hours a day? Kennedy used to a large extent. I mean, I'm not talking about a phone call here or a phone call there. I mean, are you willing to schedule people into the Oval Office or wherever you're at, wherever town you're in? If the president flies to Chicago or South Bend or whatever, is he willing to sit down or go to a little meeting at the Chicago Board of Trade or Chicago Board of Options Exchange or the Chamber of Commerce and just sit down with the people on the thing and say, okay, what's affecting you? You can't do it all day long, but are these people willing to do that? Now, is the security so bad you can't do it? I don't know. I'd probably make sure that we could do it in some way. But, I mean, if you don't do that, you just get in this, I think you just, in part of, you know, Biden's issue, and one is he's having trouble being old, but I don't think anybody gets to see the guy. So what comes worse, the chicken or the egg? But I think he's totally out of touch. Now, can anybody get in to see Trump? I don't know.
Biden is major now.
Yeah. But is she willing to let somebody come in? And is she going to keep any kind of a connection with regular people outside? I mean, did anybody talk? I mean, evidently the pork strike... port strike, I almost said pork strike, but a port strike is settled, okay? So well, it's settled. They're going to push it, or they've agreed on the.
It's on hold.
Well, they agreed on a wage number, and the other stuff they're negotiating with, and they extended it to January, which.
Right, but the language they're using is they've suspended the strike.
Right, but they I think they're getting a raise, right? I'm not sure about that. So okay, so it's moving. Now, I would find a way. Now, with the security world we're in, I would find a way if I was the president, sneakily, to talk to somebody on both sides. What do you got? What's the problem here? I mean, I got to know. Kevin, I just got to know. I can't have one of my people telling me what this thing is unless I really trust them. Then you got to. There's a fine line between too much in the detail and not knowing any detail, because the devil is in the detail, right? I mean, hey, I got a question for you. I almost was ready to do the big thing this morning until that guy hit the home run last night. I'm looking here at the Major League Baseball salaries. Now, I have a problem with this, Kevin. As you know, every time I look at a number, I go, wait a minute, it's not the right number. Here for all to see are the payrolls when the year started, I believe. But as a season ticket holder for many years, the Cubs, and watch them jettison guys they're paying in the middle of the year, and at the end of the year, the payroll is half as what it was, and my ticket prices are still the same. I always get kind of pissed off at that. But I can't seem to find a number for the end of the year. Now, is there one out there that I just can't? I'm just a lame, or I'm just lame, or what?
Don't know.
Anyway, do you realize? I want to ask actually this question: that five teams that are in the playoffs are in the bottom nine in payroll.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised.
Well, when you say that, I'm gonna quiz your behind. Who's got the highest payroll? I'll bet you don't get this. Nobody did last night.
Oh, yeah, because everybody said the Dodgers, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's probably the Phillies. Okay, so who is it now that we've played the guessing game?
It would be the Mets.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah, they have a high payroll, and now they're not sure if they're going to be able to keep Pete Alonso. Although they're now that he's the hero of the of last night's game and advanced him to the next round, they're probably going to have a lot of pressure from their fans to keep him.
Well, this is actually, you know, when we look at these numbers, you never look at it before. All of a sudden, you get a million questions. I mean, this is really interesting. The Mets and the Yankees are over $300 million. 305 and 303 respectively. And then you drop basically down into the next chunk. You drop over 55 or 60. Now you got the Dodgers, Phillies, Astros, Rangers, Blue Jays, Braves, and Cubs, all between, and Giants, all between $200 million and $250 million. So there's
I wonder how the Dodgers count Ohtani's salary. Because he deferred so much money. I wonder if they're doing that cash, if they're doing cash basis or life of the contract.
Good question. But I'm saying, I didn't really expect this, though, Kevin. There seems to be pockets. The Mets and Yankees are 50, 60 million ahead of everybody else. Then you've got the Dodgers at 249, down to the Giants at 211. That rounds out the top 10. So that's eight teams. So you're between 249 and 211, you got eight teams. Now, the next team down is another $30 million. There's a next chunk. Now, the Cardinals are 179. The Red Sox are 176. I thought the Red Sox would be higher, to be honest with you. But, I'm wrong looking at this. Angels, 172. God, they got to be the worst team in the world for 172, aren't they? Then you got the Padres, 161. The White Sox, believe it or not. And again, this is where we start the year at 142. What do you think they are now, 42?
Well, they still that's a good question. But, again, the guys they dealt off, probably weren't that expensive.
A couple of pitchers weren't they?
What's the guy that's pitcher for the Dodgers now? The young guy used to wear a man bun all the time. I forget his name. Anyway, I think he was probably somewhere in his arbitration years.
Well, they're paying the left fielder. At the time, they were paying the kid from the Cubs, although he wasn't that much.
I think Jimenez was probably under a long-term deal because the way you can sign the Cuban players was a little different. So you had that. I think the same thing with their center fielders is it's a long-term deal. So he's being paid well for a young guy, but he's not being paid an ungodly sum for an all-star center fielder, which he was a couple of years ago.
I think they're still paying Moncada.
Yeah. But again, you know, Moncada was pretty young. Now, I don't know how far back that goes and what contract number he's on, but Moncada and, I've got the picture of the guy in my mind. I just can't remember his name. The pitcher, they were part of the Chris Sale deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Moncada came over, he was like one of the top prospects in baseball. He's just never been healthy.
Well, anyway, after the 10th spot where the Giants are 2-11, the next person down, like I said, is the Cardinals. They're like another $30 million down. Now, group there, you have the Cardinals, the Red Sox, the Angels, the Padres in the 160 to 180 range. Then you drop another $20 million, and you've got the White Sox, Rockies, Diamondbacks, Mariners, Nationals, all kind of in that group. Then you drop down another 10, where you got the Royals. These are guys that are like at 100, and I am stunned. Guess who's third from the bottom?
Are you telling me the Cubs are third from the bottom?
No, the Cubs are way up. Cubs are...
No, that's what I thought, yeah.
The Guardians are like 93.
Oh, I'm not really surprised. They have a young team, but they have a few guys that they have to pay.
Well, the lowest is I'm sure you'd guess.
The thing is, when I say I'm not surprised that five of the teams are amongst the lowest paid, it's because they have really good young teams. They're sort of like Tampa. Like the Rays are, where the Rays are perpetually good, but they never keep anybody past, you know, once a guy's going into his final year of free agency, he's traded and they get more prospects. They're just really good at evaluating talent and then nurturing it and getting it to the major leagues. So they always have a steady stream, and that always makes them a pretty good team. You know, if you look at the Royals, you look at the Guardians, you look at any number of those teams, they're very young, and everybody is in their early seasons. You know, Bobby Witt is what, third year, fourth year?
He's really good.
I don't know if anybody, and he's an MVP caliber player.
Does anybody really want to play the Royals? They're gonna be the fastest team in the league, aren't they? Or close?
Yeah, I think it'd be a real pain in the ass to play them. Just like it was last year, if you caught the Diamondbacks, and there's a few other teams that are like that too. And what's interesting is that I do think we've seen more teams move away from that, you know, it's all about the power approach that we've seen so long. I think we've seen a lot of teams move away from that because of the way the rules have changed. As an example, you know, if you have fast guys who are good base stealers, then you want them to get on base, because if you get Pete Crow Armstrong on base, it's a double. And the reason I attribute part of that to the rules change is the pitcher only gets to throw over there twice, or even, you know, and stepping off the rubber counts as throwing over there twice. So you really can't hold a guy on base very well.
Do you believe how fast these games are? No, some of these games?
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Andrew didn't think so. Our Wednesday producer went to the game last Friday. He didn't know much about baseball. His boss takes a bunch of people from him. He's with the Canes, that chicken joint. They take some of the managers, they go to the game, and I guess they were a little late. He goes, yeah, it was kind of, that was the hour 48-minute game. He goes, I just sat down, I had a beer, and we were done.
Well, don't show up late is the moral of the story there.
But here's but this real quick.
Yeah, but you know, the point is, you know, that's a rules change. The other thing is, you know, when they could overshift on guys, and you know, I always felt like you're an idiot if you don't learn to hit the ball in away from the shift. But they didn't, which meant guys were hitting the ball really hard. But if you didn't hit it out of the park, there was a second baseman playing, 20 feet into the outfield. Or a shortstop, you know, or a third baseman, or somebody on the left side, playing so deep into the outfield that they were going to get you out anyway. So yeah, you know, everybody was swinging for home runs. I think with the rules changes, they've gotten back to the style of baseball, you know, not to the nth degree, but more closer to the style of baseball you and I grew up watching.
Well, if you, I would love them to do that with Pete Crow Armstrong. All he's got to do is bunt up by the pitcher. He's got a double, for God's sake. I mean, any lefty would have put the guy way out there. If you're not Ted Williams and you got the ego thing going, that should be a big advantage for you. All you got to do is bunt it out there past the pitcher, and you got a hit.
Yeah, and he does that some.
Yeah,
you know, he does he does it enough that it, you know, it forces the defense to be honest, and that's that. You know, that's always my thought process on it. Is I don't want anybody to think that they can shift or that they can adjust on me and get away with it. I want, you know, I always would want to move them back to where they were. And then I get to hit against the straight up, you know.
All right, one more question. Who's the lowest payroll? This should be. You should get this in a second.
Oh, Rockies.
No, the Athletics.
Rockies. Yeah. Okay.
Well, they're like 60, but now above them, starting at 86, you got the Pirates, and now there's a group of teams between. Let's say 86 and 106, or 115. Say 115. No, say 106. If you go 115, you've got a bunch of playoff teams here. The Guardians are third from the bottom at 93. They got a good young team. The Orioles are fourth from the bottom at 94. Then you've got the Tigers are 24th at 103. So three of your best teams are in this bottom seven. And at 2021, you got the Royals, you know, and up from there. I mean, it's pretty interesting that the Diamondbacks are 140, White Sox are 142. They're like right in the middle. Boy, talk about wasted dough. But this brings up a lot of questions here. You know, I was listening to yesterday about what Jed Hoyer, I'm not a big fan of his, but he's talking about Cody Bellinger. And how they, you know, they got to keep him, or maybe should keep, but he gets to be a free agent. Kevin,
yeah, he can opt out of his contract. I can't imagine that he will. That would seem like a very foolish move to me.
Well, I don't. I mean,
he's not gonna do better than the money he's getting.
He can become a free agent. I guess the Cubs can still sign him after he becomes a free agent, right? If they want to compete.
Yeah, they can.
I mean, if you do the money thing, and you know, we're talking about people, so it's kind of hard to constantly do the money thing. I think the guy, at best, 265, 270.
Yeah, he's been an MVP before. He was really, really good with the Cubs last year, but he was among those who just was either injured or a combination of injured and not hitting when the Cubs were struggling, and. You know, and that was most of their guys.
Well, but
most of the guys they were counting on. If you have Hap, Swanson, and Bellinger not hitting, that's, you know, right the top half of your lineup. You're kind of screwed, especially when they had the two young guys at the bottom of the lineup who couldn't hit for beans. So that was a real problem for them. Think of how much different it would have been if Swanson and Bellinger in particular had matched their previous season.
See, I don't think those guys are good enough to do that in a vacuum. They're not Guerrero, they're not Ernie Banks, that on a world's horse bleep team are going to hit 330. There's very few guys like that. If they got guys around them that are hitting, they're going to hit. But anyway, I guess what I'm saying is if you do, let's do this after a break, Kevin, because I remembered, and I'll talk about some pretty interesting economic dynamics on baseball and how much you pay. Now, if you dump, what's Cody making? 12, 10, something like that? I don't know.
No. He's more like near in the 20 range.
All right, so I'm saying if you dump him, just say you're gone or he leaves, and you get somebody to fill his spot that hits 240, okay, you know, he's not going to be as good defensively, or he's not probably not going to be as variable. You can play him three different positions, but and he's almost a Gold Glover at all three. But what do you? And the other guy is there for $3 million. What are you paying per extra hit? $500,000 a hit?
Yeah, too much. That's for sure.
The S&P futures up 15. NASDAQ futures up 81. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management.
Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ Futures up 82. We're trying to creep up here before this labor number today. We've got the port strike, no longer an item today, and so we're not bitching about the president one way or the other. We're either stopping it, not starting it. I don't have people complaining about the union, so that subject's off the table. Of course, we still got big time wars going on in the Middle East, and everybody's warning today that this constant you do something, we have to retaliate. Okay, then we have to retaliate. It's starting to become like the Hatfields and McCoys. So everybody's obviously very concerned about that. Oil has had some really interesting volatility. In fact, we did a couple of spreads in the oil ETF yesterday. We bought next week, sold this week. Now we'll see if that works out, because the volatility, implied volatility this week, was a lot higher. You know, we'll see, because maybe you do something like that. I mean, the volatility, implied volatility, is different for a reason. So it's your judgment to say, should it be that high? And right now my judgment was it shouldn't be that high. We'll see how that works out by the end of the day. Dow futures are up 59. We're in Asia. We've got the Hong Kong is up. They're up 623, almost 3%, 22,736. Who says you can't create value, Kevin? We can make value. Let me kick this up here just for a laugh. I don't normally put the graphs of these things up there, but I will on this one. Come on, machine. Got so much stuff going here. Anyway, the Nikkei is up 83.2%. Shanghai is up 248. Now, these guys were on the whoa. They're still closed for some reason. I've got the Hang Seng. It's now today. Let's get this 1 year on this. Individual stocks. Got Amazon up 289. I've got Microsoft up $1.45. So nothing really crazy, but everything is pretty much leaning to the upside, and we'll know when today's a big day. We have Carl on with the numbers and so forth. So anyway, I got the Hang Seng was like 18,000 about 2 weeks ago. So it's got to be like 20%. You know, that's a lot. So, matter of fact, I'll give you the exact date. It was 17,177 on the 11th of September. Ouch. 3 weeks ago. Now we're 22,000. It's up 5,000 points. Funny what little money into the system will do, eh? We have the bonds. The 10-year rate is almost a 4%. It's 3.85%. 30-year rate's well over 4%, almost 4.2%. So even though the Fed is lowering these short-term rates, the long-term rates are not getting lower, okay? They're just not. Over in Europe, they're slightly higher. DAX up 42.2%, FTSE down 34.4%, CAC around up 38.5%. Yesterday, as a way of review, we had the Dow was down 184, S&P down 9, NASDAQ down 6. So it's the first down day we'd had in a while. Bonds up 2 basis points, 3.0.
8-7. I'm saying this thing continues to creep. The Bund up 6 basis points, 2.19. Japan up 2.89. Oil, which has obviously been the big thing here. It's up a buck 05, 74.76. It's up from almost $67 a week ago, but it's at the high end of this range. We'll see if it breaks out. Brent up a buck, 78.68. Natural gas up 3 cents, over 3 bucks, 3.00. People must be worried about a cold winter. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.11. We've got gold up 80 cents, 26.80. Can't seem to make it to 2,700, but it keeps trying. Silver down 6 cents, 32.39. Again, it's a high end of that range. Copper unchanged, 4.56. U.S. dollar, it's been a big week to gain in the dollar. We're 110 in the euro. The euro was almost 112 last week. So euro's down almost 2%. That's a huge move in a week. British pound, 131. It was over 132. The biggest moves against the euro. And Japan is at 146. Last of this long story, Bitcoin up 510, 61,372. Off the highs, but still pretty much up there, over 60,000. Ricky, save me. What traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:42 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. A little rainy today, but it's okay. It's still nice and pretty, you know? We got 67 degrees right now with a high of 70 degrees. A shower in the area early this morning. It's going to be breezy with clouds giving away to some sun, so that's going to be nice. Tonight will be clear with a low of 59 degrees. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 110. Very hot with abundant sunshine, and so there's going to be some dangerous heat. Tonight will be clear and warm with the low of 78 degrees. It seems like lately all that Phoenix is doing is just beating its own records from the past.
Yep.
When it comes to heat. On the traffic in Chicago, we got inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 27 minutes. We're looking at 52 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 37 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 25 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 34 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the MLB, the Mets beat the Brewers 4-2, and we got no baseball today. Lastly, the NFL. Yesterday, the Falcons beat the Buccaneers 36-30. And don't forget that this Sunday, October 6th, we got the Bears playing the Panthers at 12 p.m. and the Cardinals playing the 49ers at 3:05 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
Kevin, kind of a little bit of an old story here, but I'll lob it out there. And how one of the Time, there's an article I probably still have around here someplace, had to do with Roger Clemens. He finished his career out with the Yankees. Remember that?
Yeah.
He was, I'm looking at Baseball Reference. I thought his last year he went, the last part of the year he went to the Yankees. I don't know that he was there all the year or whatever it was. But anyway, the article had to do with, I think it was in July or August, and they were talking about should somebody pick up Roger Clemens. And it was at the trade deadline or something. But the Bo Sox, the Yankees, and somebody else were all shoving for that title in the Eastern Division there in the American League. Now, nothing said he had to stay in the American League. But it was really interesting, the numbers on it. And, I don't remember anybody who wrote a story, but I remember the substance of it. It had to do with, okay, he's going to be your fifth starter in any one of these three teams. And the Yankees, or the Bo Sox, their fifth starter was pretty good. So they say, okay, if they sign Roger Clemens, the guy's probably going to get six starts instead of the current fifth starter. But the current fifth starter was good enough to where they thought he'd be like 3-3 because he had been. He'd been like 500.
Well, or even if he isn't 3-3, what's the team when he pitches?
Yeah, so I'm saying, so okay, if Clemens comes in and say he goes 4-2 versus this guy, you essentially have, he's worth one game to you. How many games are you out? Is it one game going to make that much difference in the wild card or whatever the wild card was different then?
Well, if you get in by one game, I guess it makes a big difference. But
well, but then they, but
I guess they ask the Diamondbacks this year.
Well, but I'm saying it, yes, but you do these kinds of. Who's to say your current guy wasn't going to go 4-2? But saying there wasn't much difference between the two, I guess is the question. Now, the Yankees, whoever their fifth starter was, I think he sucked. So they said he could actually go 4-2, where the other guy might go 1-5. So he might be worth, for the several million dollars you had to pay him for 8 weeks, whatever it was, he might actually get you three wins. So it might be a million dollars a win. where the other guy, it's you know, it's $4 million for the one win that you may not even need.
And yeah, and that's what the wins above replacement stat tries to normalize, because it's not looking at anything but the individual's performance and how that individual performs relative to others. It's not a perfect stat because, as we've discussed, sometimes it depends on who's batting behind you or who's batting in front of you. But it's not, it's not really, it's not really counting, it's comparing you to the average player, to the most, the most average player that's there, and then you can say, are you plus one? Are you plus two? Are you plus three? Now, you're right. If a plus one, might not be a big deal, but if plus one is replacing minus three, that's a significant swing. If plus one is making, dead zero, the dead average player, that's not a significant swing.
Well, it's a
that's what that stat attempts to do.
Well, not taking a shot at
how well there used to be a guy, and I can't remember the writer's name. But he used to calculate something called total average. And all he said was the basic unit of offense in baseball is a base. So total average measured how often you get on base and what kind of on base you get. So obviously a home run is four bases. And a triple is three bases. But a walk and a stolen second and stolen third is also three bases.
I'm going to say a fast guy, one base should be worth 1.1 or 1.2 because it helps the guy after him.
Well, and I think the WAR stat does accommodate that. There's a whole you can go look up how it's calculated.
Name me one person who quotes the WAR stat like if it's gospel. Has any idea how it's calculated? Could go through the math in a second. I went through it a couple times. I can't go through it. It's useful.
It's difficult. So, I trust it, but it's like all stats. It's one of several, and you have to look at all of them. So, you look at WAR, you look at OPS, you look at on base percentage, you look at home runs. I've said this many a time. I like guys who hit a lot of doubles because guys who hit a lot of doubles will hit a pretty fair share of home runs for the most part. Nico Hoerner hits a lot of doubles, does not hit a lot of home runs. But most guys who are hitting doubles are going to be the same guys who are going to be hitting the ball over the fence.
Mark Grace was an exception to that. He was a prodigious double hitter, not a huge home hitter.
Yeah, so there's a few of those around. And I think that's really good, too, because, if you look at it, if you have a guy like in your number three slot who hits a lot of doubles, that guy is going to often give you a chance to score in the first inning. He's going to give you a good chance to score in the first inning if neither guy gets on base in front of him, because he's going to find his way in the scoring position, and then maybe your number four can drive him in with a single. Or if you have guys on base, he's going to be in a good position to drive him in, and he's not going to just, he's not going to often do it with a little a little gorky single that where the runners have to hold to see if he's going to get in there. He is going to drive him in. So that's why I'm very fond of, it's one of the things I always look at with a hitter is how often does he hit extra base hits. If you want to hit 50 home runs, that's fine. That's better than that's better than just being a doubles hitter. But there's only a couple of guys right now in Major League Baseball who can do that.
Well, I know this is coming from a grumpy old softball pitcher, but the thing that absolutely is starting to frost me huge is we don't care about wins and losses anymore. And I'm like, what are you talking about? my attitude always was, as Kevin, we played out at Mount Greenwood in a doubleheader league, and you might have one game with the wind blowing in like a hurricane and the next game it's blowing out. You can't say the first game you lost 5-3, it was a quality start. No, it wasn't. If the other guy gives, if you score three, you're supposed to give up two, right? I mean, maybe baseball's getting away from this some, but if your team gets up seven, you're pitching to contact. If you give up three or four, who cares?
you want it over with, right? You're not going to walk people. You're not going to let somebody get seven. It's all about, I mean, how many days did we win the first game 5-3 and turn around and win the other way and win that one 14-12? So the second one wasn't the quality start? I mean, what are we talking about? The idea is to win, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the idea is to win. I think the thing with wins and losses, though, is that makes it so difficult to use it as a major barometer in Major League Baseball now is that most pitchers don't pitch long enough to be that effective. And you know, you rely so much more on middle relief, late relief, lining them up. You know, pitching staffs are no longer 10 pitchers. They're more like 13, 14.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole different approach to pitching that goes in there, and that's what tends to diminish wins and losses. And then you can also get pitchers who are really good and pitch deep into games, like King Felix did up in Seattle for a while, where he had, he had a losing record and won a Cy Young Award.
Yeah, well, what was the classic game? Was it Juan Marichal and Warren Spahn where they both pitched like 13 or 14 innings or something? It was 1-0, and the Giants manager wanted to take Marichal out, and he goes, his response was, as long as that old man's still pitching, I'm not coming out. He ended up losing, didn't he? Didn't Warren Spahn beat him?
I think I don't remember the outcome of the game. That would be fun to look up, though.
All right, and
I'm going to give you one
more trivia question, and we're going to talk. We'll talk 5 minutes about the labor report coming out and what you're seeing. Two people have won the Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year, and maybe a third, sort of. How's that for an intro?
Okay.
Who are the two that did the Rookie of the Year and MVP the same year?
Well, Fred Lynn.
Ding, 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 ding.
And let's go Ichiro Suzuki.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay.
Who's the third sort of?
Oh, the sort of is probably somebody who didn't qualify quite.
No, I'm going to say somebody won a Rookie of the Year and a Cy Young same year.
Oh, okay. Rookie of the Year and Cy Young would have been Fernando Valenzuela.
Ding, ding, ding. You're hot this morning.
How about it?
Yeah. Fred Lynn, boy, there was a... You know, he played on the Southern Cal football team that the Irish beat in South Bend when I was a senior. He played football, too.
All right.
I
remember that game. That was the Eric Penix 85-yard run.
They had Lynn Swann.
Yep, they had Lynn Swann. Irish had some really, really good offensive linemen, some good, young defensive linemen who went on to pro careers. But I will always remember that game. First of all, for the listeners, Southern California, the Irish had not beaten them in quite a few years. It was John McKay's years at Southern Cal. I think they had one tie in there, but they had, quite a few losses in a row. And so the Irish went on that year to win the national championship, but they had to get past Southern Cal. Now, first of all, they had Anthony Davis, who had run wild against them the year before. And so we had taped on the sidewalks all over campus were pictures of Anthony Davis. And as people were walking around campus that week, they were actually single file lining up to step on the picture of Anthony Davis. That was the campus attitude for the game.
Well, it turns out they had all those guys that never even went through the admissions department there, for God's sake. They had some serious guys.
They were really good, and the rivalry was really good. And then you get to game day, and it's a tight ball game, and then Eric Panic breaks this 85-yard run. Now, it's one of the best block pitch sweeps you'll ever see. He ran through a big hole. I think one guy had a shot at him and kind of, arm tackled him around at the thighs and just got shut off. And then he just bolted down the field. It is as loud as I have ever heard a stadium. And it was sort of, if you've ever been, like outside the airport and you hear a jet coming closer and closer and closer and the roar gets louder and louder and louder. It was like every 5 yards it was a little bit louder, and it was this roaring roar as they got, as he got down the field. And that's as much as the play itself, that's what I remember, is that how the stadium just, you know, it was like somebody was turning a dial and making it louder and louder and louder.
The Irish had this guy named Art Best, who ended up playing for the Bears for a while, and he blocked a couple of punts and stuff, and he was a pretty really skillful guy. He actually came from north of Columbus, and my family knew him real well. And the coach said the day he really wanted to play, you needed him in a center. And if he wasn't in the mood, he sucked. He was kind of one of those kind of guys. Well, this particular play, he was a flanker, and he came in from the left side, and he torpedoed the – not torpedoed, wasn't an illegal block. He nailed the right defensive end so hard that he toppled into the tackle into somebody else. He collapsed the entire Southern Cal line.
Yeah.
That was probably the best block I've ever seen. Anyway, Kevin, we're going to have these numbers today. People are worried about them. I think – some people are getting laid off. I mean, I've heard about, especially in the IT areas, where people are having trouble getting jobs. What are you seeing? I mean, every area is different, obviously. I know in the metalworking stuff, where my nephew is, I mean, they can't find enough people. And getting the skillful people is hard to find. They're kind of picking each other's place off. So one of the dudes died. One of the owners died in one of these small firms. Guy couldn't wait to buy him. Not because of the business, because of the 10 people that work there. So, I mean, it is spotty, but I think some IT stuff is not so hot. If we didn't have hospitals and those kinds of things, I don't know what we'd do necessarily in terms of getting people to go to work. What do you think it's going to show? Overtime, I think, is a little down, but it's hard to say. I mean, that's why we have Carl.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people working four-day weeks now in manufacturing. So that's not good. you're seeing the short weeks. You are also, I think you're right about tech sector. I think placements are difficult. I think placements are difficult for a lot of people coming out with business degrees, but not as bad for accountants. The accounting firms are starving for getting good young accountants because they don't like paying them, you know, experienced accountants. So I think it's going to vary sector to sector, but we have seen weakness amongst college grads for a little while, and we have seen it, kind of ebb and flow amongst people with other, you know, non-bachelor's degree credentials. But I think they're doing a little bit better than people with bachelor's degrees.
How troubling are you finding it? When I say troubling, in terms of being able to compare, not end up with an apple versus an orange. Still to this day, even though I talk to Carl and I talk to you, and I know that it's changing, if somebody tells me they make $50 an hour, I immediately go $2,000 a week, and I just can't do that anymore. I mean, in our day, every work 40, not I mean, pretty much everybody, unless you work part time, work 40 hours. So you could do the math real easy. I don't know what you do with the 40. Is the person, I suppose, he's helping his brother-in-law put in fences or something the other day.
Well, they're either doing that or they're just working retail.
Like one day a week, you drop off at the Walmart or something.
Yeah, one or two days a week of working at Home Depot or even Walmart or a grocery store or something like that.
Now, if you were at Home Depot, what aisle would you be?
What aisle would I be? Let me see. I'd be just like the greeter at Walmart. I'd have the Home Depot equivalent of the greeter at Walmart.
So you wouldn't? I think I could still handle the electrical aisle.
Yeah, I would not. I don't have that good of. I would have the make it up as you go and see if it works.
Well,
aisle.
Yeah. I didn't say I wasn't going to do that. I mean, take a while. Yeah, try this. Yeah. If it's no good, come back and buy something else.
No, I often go in thinking, well, here's what I need to do. I don't know that it's conventional or anything else, but I try to envision it, and then I'll walk around the store a little bit and see what kind of parts I can get, and then I'll craft it and take it home.
The Home Depot by me, just ridiculously stupid story. At one point, the downstairs apartment, the ground, the floor wasn't concrete. And none of those buildings were in those days. So after a couple of floods, I go, you know, we're going to make this thing concrete. But there's no way you could get a concrete truck stuffed down there, so you had to actually make the concrete down there. So I ended up, I was a little younger, I ended up hauling like 85 bags of concrete for the guy down, and the guy mixed them up downstairs, and he did it. So the guys at Home Depot got to know me so well that when I showed up, they all scattered because nobody wants to load 20 bags of concrete.
Nobody wants to load concrete, yeah, so they scatter.
80 pounds a bag.
So you were the opposite of Norm walking into chairs. Huh?
Oh, God, yeah. The guys would look at me, I'd see them dash. Plus, I mean, you know, I was a little younger, but still, when I was younger, the 80-pound bag wasn't a big deal. Well, now it is.
Yeah, sure is.
Anyway, Kevin, thank you. S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 72. We'll have Carl in a second, and Carl might already be here. Carl, are you here? Say hello to Kevin if you're here.
I am. Hello, Kevin.
Good morning, Carl. How you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm filling up on coffee. That's how my, you know, espresso machine doing its thing. And responding to all of the idiots who are attempting to play the secular political game on the storm response, and getting ready to see a stunning jobs report. By the way, cute thing with the longshoreman deal, huh? Yeah, isn't it funny how when you literally claim you're going to strangle America, literally, and you're dumb enough to do it on camera where it'll never go away because the internet never allows you to actually delete anything. And then somebody figures out that you live in a multi-million dollar mansion and drive a Bentley and starts plastering that all over the place, that this doesn't go the way that you think it's going to.
Nobody cares, though, if the chairman of the company
drives a Bentley. The PR game is everything. The PR game is everything.
Well, and you know what? The sticking point is one they can't win, okay? And that's and it's not wages. It's automation. They're going to lose this. I don't know when they lose it. Now, here's the thing. I am not, you know, I'm not opposed to humans doing work. In fact, I'm one of those people who thinks that this entire AI craze, as you well know, is a bunch of BS and it's going to blow up in everybody's face. However, the facts are that none of the ports controlled by these unions, by the labor union, none of them are anywhere near the top producing ports in terms of TEUs moved per unit of time per unit of available berth. Okay. Now, the entire reason we have the standard of living we have today everywhere in the world, not just here in America, everywhere in the world, is productivity advancement. And whether you like it or not, if you have a repetitive, little or zero thinking job, but precision and speed count, the machine beats you. Okay, and you don't have to like this, but it's truth. It's
well, and generally they make far fewer mistakes. You know,
well, that's what I'm saying. The machine beats you because precision counts. Okay.
Yeah, precision counts. So volume counts, but precision counts more.
Well, volume and precision are, I mean, you know, now we have robots that can pick and place little surface mount ICs on printed circuit boards to the nearest 10,000th of an inch, do it all day long, and by the way, every single piece of electronics that you enjoy today would not exist but for that, because the days in which I built boards and then stuffed through-hole components into them and then hand-soldered them, those days are long gone in consumer electronics. Now, when I first started writing code in industrial electronics, that kind of stuff was still very common. Today, you can't find that kind of equipment anywhere. Right? It's all gone. I mean, I've got 5 pinball machines in my basement. Most of them have through-hole boards in them. So, I mean, you know, the stuff's still there and still works. However, the density, as the density of chips and such on those boards went up, and it has for everything. It's why you have a cell phone instead of a computer that is the size of a, you know, half a building, right? As the density goes up, you exceed the human's capacity to do that job in a reasonably efficient and accurate fashion. And so the robot ends up doing it because he has to. Right? I mean, it doesn't matter whether you like it or not. It's how it works. The thing is this. You're talking about a task that when you get down to it, the machine is going to produce less wear, tear, and damage on the containers and on the chassis on the trucks, because it won't be off by an eighth of an inch, which, by the way, is acceptable when you're loading it on the spike, because, you know, it's a spike. It will center it. Except the machine can hit that thing dead center on within that 10,000th of an inch every time. All right. And so you're going to have less wear on the equipment. It's faster. It never strikes. And it works third shift and doesn't want overtime.
I think that some industries have gone so far that they've gone too far. I was watching those videos that you guys sent around. That didn't look too efficient to me. Those things looked like they're pretty friggin' expensive, and they're moving slow as hell.
Well, some of it's
what,
not.
What do you think is moving faster, Tom?
Well, I'm saying that you can have automation at some point, and I certainly agree with you that when it comes down to like putting cars together, and you've got robots on the line doing the repetitive stuff, you're not going to get an argument out of me that the welding kind of thing. But I'm saying when you go from 100 hours of manpower in the car, okay, down to 30. I'm not sure that I could argue with that at all. But the drive to go from 30 to 24, I'm not so sure. At some point, you don't get diminishing returns.
Well, at some point you do.
That's what I'm saying. The gleeful. Sometimes people are so gleeful of another industry going, but the part that hasn't. The part to me that I have a problem with, it has nothing to do with something being more efficient. I mean, I get it, especially if you got a robot out in the rain and the wind instead of a person, that's probably a pretty good thing. The idea of things being more efficient is that labor and management both share in that gain. And that's, we have not seen that at all in the last 30 years.
Chief, I know. Look, I grew up watching the unions put themselves out of their own positions in many fields, okay? Just as one example, my father was a controller for a modest size, not a small business, but a mid-sized glazing shop, right? He was the CPA and the guy that made sure the books got done right. He wasn't the bookkeeper, but he was the controller. He was the guy on top of that, right?
Yep.
All right. So at my first actual programming thing that I did for money was figuring out how to avoid them having to spend $3,000 that Burroughs wanted to cut a new paper tape with their bookkeeping machine to change two tax rates. All right, now, believe it or not, these clowns thought that they should be able to get $3,000 not to make any changes in the software, just to change two tax rates that were hard-coded into that paper tape that loaded the program. Okay, this is, before you had hard disks, right?
Yeah.
So every time you wanted to do this particular function, you had to load this tape that had the code on it. Well, as it turns out, the machine had a monitor mode that you could get into, and you could modify the contents of memory after the tape was loaded. So I sat there for a Saturday and figured out, with having only a blue bar printout of the machine code, no instruction manual, no nothing, figured out where that was stored, how to load the tape, and then the key sequence from monitor mode to make those changes before you started it. And wrote up the procedure for it so that their bookkeeper could do that. And that was one Saturday instead of paying Burroughs $3,000 for the tape, okay? Never mind the fact that you could then, if you need to do it again because the tax rate changed again, you could do it the second time, right? Because it's just, okay, this is where you do this. But in the process of doing this, I actually one time sat at the top of the stairs on top of the top shack part of the outfit with a stopwatch, and actually clocked one dude and how many hours of actual work he put in when he got paid for 8 hours on union scale. And
the dreaded time and motion study. My stepfather used to do that.
One guy. Okay, how much actual labor did he perform? He got paid to do 8 hours of labor.
It revealed much time, little motion.
It revealed that they got about 4 hours worth of actual output out of a guy that they were paying for eight.
This is all. I can't.
But wait, Chief. Yeah. I'm not talking about them not having the work for him to do. I'm talking about the rest of the time was spent in the can at the food truck.
Yeah. Well,
All right. Hey, you guys. I need to jump in on something real quick, and then I got to go because we are taking 40 dual credit high school students over to Notre Dame for panel discussions and a tour of the data center. But and they're going to be coming to get me in a couple of minutes. But a couple of things. One, and Carl, you'll get a kick out of this. I was at a logistics conference for the first few days of this week. Very heavy on AI sessions, very light on use cases.
Well, yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah, funny how that works. So, there are some, and there are some. And an example is, and I want to tie this back to the ports time, you're talking about all these drones, you know, kind of hauling around containers, and they're not moving that fast, which is fine. But you have to think of that that coordination in terms of the total time for the process. So being faster at step three doesn't do you a damn bit of good if it's slower at step five.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
So, you know, so the one thing that you can do with this kind of automation, or one of the things that you can do with this kind of automation, in addition to replacing labor, is that you can coordinate the activities real well throughout your process so that it's all timed out really well, and you're not just, you know, stacking up at one end of the process or the other. And that's, you know, that's what you were looking at when you were looking like at that Rotterdam video. Yeah. I sent you. Is it's just doing that.
Well, the one where the driver had to go through about 14 different checks on his own, all they did was off the labor over to the driver.
Yeah. Well, and you know, start looking at some of the things. One of the problems with the ports of getting that a truck into and out of the ports is that the independents hate it because you have to wait in long lines just to clear security getting into and out of the ports. Of course, if you're getting paid hourly by a trucking company, then you don't care. But if you own your own truck and you want to get in and out of the port, then sitting there for an hour trying to get through the security check is lost time and lost money. So in their case, anything that's going to automate that process, and I think you're going to actually see people starting to offload the pickup, take that out of the port. Because you can drone it out of the port, drones don't have to clear security, and then that handoff can happen outside of the port infrastructure.
Don't disagree. Thank you, Kevin. We'll work. By the way, that sounds like fun. Where's the data center? I thought the data center was over there.
It's Notre Dame. It's Notre Dame's data center.
I thought they put a lot of stuff down by where the train station was or something.
They do have. That's where their supercomputer array is.
Yeah. All right.
Gotta go.
All right. Carl, my only pushback, well, not my only pushback, my pushback on all this, I spent many a boring hour in class studying labor economics and all this kinds of stuff, and we did a lot of efficiency studies over in Chicago, and I'm not a genius at it or something, but the idea at the end of the day, I mean, the theory is, okay, if you've got guys, you know, soldering stuff by hand, and all of a sudden you get a machine that does it, and they can go a lot faster and a lot better, these people will now be freed up to do other stuff. The cost of the item goes down. Okay, and again, every time we took a test, the University of Chicago, and I keep using University of Chicago, before you get the test, the Milton Freemans of the world would say, assume perfect competition, assume monopoly, assume cartel. Because all these answers are different no matter where the hell you are. Okay, so in theory, nobody can argue with what you're talking about. If all of a sudden that guy, you don't need him here anymore, and the price of the widget goes from $5 to $4, and you do 90 gazillion widgets a year, what's 90 gazillion times a dollar you saved? And all the people who bought the widgets now have extra money in their pocket. They can go somewhere else. The guy now can do something where he's worth more for, okay, and he gets paid more somewhere else because all this money is now available to do something. I mean, I get how this is supposed to flow, yet it doesn't do that.
It doesn't end up doing that.
It doesn't end up doing that. That's, I mean, if you go from 60 labor hours per pickup truck at Ford down to 25, the pickup is supposed to be, well, using the money supply stuff we can get into, that should be relatively cheaper, except now, oh, wait a minute, the management at Ford now makes $20 million a year instead of two. I mean, corresponding to what's going on in the labor side, which maybe is somewhat perfectly competitive, is the other side. Well, you used to only have three car companies. They charge you everybody damn well pleased. Because they get more efficient doesn't mean the price of the car goes down. Well, now you knock the whole theory out the door, don't you?
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, and this also goes to one of the other things that I've been making a stink about for quite a while. You know, wrote an article on this a few days ago about Amazon mandating RTO for all of their, you know, all their people. And the fact that essentially what had happened during COVID was everyone seemed to think that they were going to pull one over on all of the higher cost of living areas and their employers, and we're going to play the arbitrage game and move somewhere like here. Okay, and of course, for them, that seemed to work out really well. It screwed all the people who live and work here, because there are no $200,000 a year jobs in this area. They don't exist. And so if you drive the cost of a median house to $600,000, you've all of a sudden dispossessed everybody that lives here and works here. The only way you can afford to do that is if you're working for you know, Amazon that has their, you know, their cost of living basis for how they're paying people on the West Coast. You know, I would have, that balance equation is something that the employer goes through all the time. I certainly had to do it when I ran MCS. You know, I had an office downtown. The costs of having it there as opposed to out in the suburbs somewhere were considerable. The result of that was I had to pay people more than I would have had to in the suburbs. Okay, now the company that bought mine, Windstar, one of the first things they did, in which I had a suspicion they were going to pull something like this, but of course, you know, once it's not your place anymore, there's nothing you can do about it. They moved the tech support department down to Lafayette in Indiana, because there's a college there, and the cost of living is way less than it is in the city of Chicago, right?
Oh yeah.
So guess what that meant happened to all of the, you know, first off, oh yeah, you can keep your job, but guess what, you get to move down there because you can't, you, that commute you're not going to make. That ain't happening. And oh, by the way, you know, we can take 20% off what we're having to pay people an hour. All right. Now, I get it that this is, you know, that's the bad side of this, right? In that this is what companies do. But that calculation, you know, that calculation when I made it was that there was enough value in having the people and the office where the actual services were delivered that I paid the extra money, all right, to the people that worked there, because that's what it costs to have those employees come from the Chicago market. That's just what it cost. I mean, that's how it is. They made a different decision. Okay, well, ultimately, you know, Windstar blew up. So how'd that work out?
Carol, what does... I'm going to tell you, we have a few minutes before, and I got to get into telling these stories, but sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, whenever you talk to somebody, you find out something. I went to see Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Toronto, in the new stadiums. Well, yeah. Toronto wasn't all that new, but anyway, I get to Detroit, and I'm sitting next to this lady, and she had two kids, twins. God, I was 6'4 at the time, they're both taller than me, big, tall, good-looking kids. And she's sitting there, and you know, and BSing with her, because the game wasn't all that interesting. And I said, "Well, what did you do for a living?" And I said, "You know, are you married?" Blah 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 blah. She was. I was married. My husband died of this rare form of brain cancer. And of course, my ears immediately perk up. and she said she worked at a plant. I thought she said Jackson, but I'm not sure. It was a Delphi plant that made fuel injectors.
And yeah, I think there was one there.
And she said we made the best fuel injectors, like, in the world. You know, Jaguar would buy them. Everybody would buy them.
Right.
All different brands. Didn't matter if you had a Ford or you had something. They bought our fuel injectors. And she was in. Her husband worked there. I don't know what he did, but she was in kind of maintenance. You know, she cleaned offices and did some other stuff, and inventoried some things. And she said, well, all of a sudden, somebody basically got a hair up his behind that they were going to move the plant to upstate New York because there was so much unemployment up there in that Poughkeepsie, that area that used to make locomotives and all those other areas. It was like the Rust Belt for sure. We're going to move the place up there. And she said, somebody put all this down on a piece of paper, and it was going to be, everybody's going to work for 5 hours less, and we're going to make all this money by moving up there. She said, it took so long to move up there. And moving the parts, she was one of the last people in the place cataloging parts down to different drill bits and stuff. She goes, we labeled and shipped like a million, not parts, but, you know, a drill machine, the stuff that you need for a factory, which is incredible because I worked at Pullman, and the amount of stuff you need to build a railroad car is like kind of a lot. And I'm diving into this like Cub Reporter, Stocks and Jacks. I go, wait a minute, how many other people had the same cancer your husband did? She goes, oh, there was like 8 or 10. And all of a sudden, my ears.
Yeah, the light goes on.
The light
right?
is really going on. I'm going. And she goes, you know, I don't think if. She goes, you sound like you know something about finance. And I said, well, I used to. And she said, I'll bet. This is coming from a lady who was a maintenance lady. She goes, I'll bet if you looked at the original estimate and how much they were going to save by moving, by the time they get up there, the drug problems are so bad in that area. It took them 6 months for people to pass enough drug tests to have anybody working in the place. They didn't really ask anybody to move. Some people they did. She goes, I'll bet at the end of the day, they lost money on this move. And I'm sitting there going, I wonder, Carl, if they moved because of that cancer that was going around.
Well, you know, you part of the problem with all this sort of thing is. You never get the whole story, right?
No.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the stuff that's going on with the storm. You know, Tima, they've got a bunch of egg on their face because, of course, now social media is saying that, you know, everybody's going around confiscating supplies and things like that. And a lot of this is BS. And there is a lot of BS that goes on social media. There's a lot of it that's stupid. But Tima themselves, the first couple days after the storm.
What's their name, Tima and FEMA?
Tima is Tennessee Emergency Management. Okay.
Right.
So Tima was out there on social media saying, do not self-deploy, do not run supplies, just give us money. So I've been at a bunch of local politicians' heads over this, including particularly in this area because they're all GOP folks, including Glenn, who's the, you know, the Knox mayor. And I said, excuse me, but bite me. There's this thing called hierarchy of needs, and after air, breathable air, the next most important thing you damn well better have is drinkable water. And in a couple of days, if you don't have it, you're in a body bag. And, oh, by the way, one of the things this storm did was foul the intakes and destroy pumps because idiots put them down low where they could get flooded. And at that point, you know, we can argue over the stupidity later. Right now, people need cases of drinkable water. Today,
well,
right now.
The immigrants that everybody's always railing about all the money here in Chicago, I see people all the time pulling up, opening their trunks and having 50 things of water they're just giving people.
Well, and
it's a lot easier
so,
to do that than the city spending how much per bottle or whatever they're going to spend.
Well, exactly. And so I'm like, you know what? I know that I can get into this particular place. There's a church over here that's got a line of cars around the parking lot trying to get something, you know, trying to get a case of that water. And by God, over here we got it, and I got a truck. So guess what I'm going to do? I don't care whether you like it or not. And so, you know, I mean, there's some of this is. And the bureaucracy, some of it is intentionally corrupt, and some of it is just bureaucratic BS. All right, but at the end of the day, if you're the guy sitting there in a house that's been half destroyed, and there's no drinkable water coming out of the tap because the water plant has been trashed. You can argue about all that other stuff tomorrow. Right now, what you need is a bottle of Kroger's water.
Okay. But has there ever been? I mean, we touch on this all the time, and we wander into this room, and then we kind of wander back out because there's no real way to grade the system. When you start talking about, you know, competency, and we're gonna have a new president, and whoever it is going to have to somehow rely on the competency of the people who are under them. You know, you don't want to rely on the FBI not looking at 15 reports of a bunch of weirdos trying to fly planes and didn't care if they landed it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want guys in Chicago realizing they had a hole in the tunnel system and it's sitting on somebody's desk for 8 weeks till the thing broke through. I mean, is the competency worse? Is it? I mean, what does Tima do all day, every day? I mean, how many people show up for work? Is it a group? I mean, I know in Michigan City, we used to run a house from a guy, and he actually was one of the original guys who was the head of the Chicago Food Depository. I'm talking 40 years ago, when it was nowhere near the thing it is now. But he was in this emergency call up group for whatever Michigan City was, and if there was a body in the, you know, somebody, a swimmer that was down, they'd all get the call,
right?
And 50 guys would show up, and they'd hold hands if the surf wasn't too good, and they'd walk out and look for the body. You know, right. there'd be 50 people holding hands or tied together because of, you know, if the surf was a little crummy, and they would show up, and they were, I don't know how often they trained or what they did for this kind of thing or the other, but it was a pretty proud group, and I think it was volunteer. Now,
oh, yeah.
I have no idea how this even. I mean, how does this operate? A team is probably not volunteer, but do they have volunteer people? They have. If this happens, here's where you go. Here's where you go. Are they?
Well,
are
no.
They
that's the entire point. Was they were telling people not to do that?
Well, I'm talking about organized. Where?
No, I understand that, but you know, I mean, look, I have a ham radio license. Okay, I'm W3KSD. You can look at. I mean, you know, that's a public database. Anybody can look it up. What these guys have done, I mean, the stupidity here, all right, there was this rural internet program that is part of Biden and Harris's thing. They refused to award any of the money. Now, we're talking about a couple of billion, several billion dollars here, all right, to any of Musk's Starlink stuff.
Really?
Yes. Now, here's the thing that pisses me off about this. You have all this infrastructure, and by the way, Asheville, a large part of why they got destroyed to the degree that they did, is that when TVA came in, I mean, you know, a lot of people hated on it because it was an FDR, you know, thing during the Depression, right? That's all socialism. Well, guess what? It made huge parts of mountain valley areas that used to flood every single year when the snow melted stop doing that. And, oh, by the way, all of those TVA dams helped, every last one of them, including a couple that were overtopped and scoured from the side. They didn't break. These guys built them correctly.
How much maintenance is it going to take to get them back to shape?
Well, they're taking out a couple of old powerhouses right now. One in particular that hasn't been used since the 1970s. It was obsolete, but it was still there. There was no reason to tear it down. Well, it got damaged enough that now it's structurally compromised. So they're out there, but they're already out fixing this stuff. They're out fixing roads. I mean, you know, there are a bunch of these guys in this area, particularly within TVA, right? I rag on them all the time about all the Green New Deal garbage and the solar and everything else. But the fact of the matter is that 100 years ago, these guys were steely-eyed missile men, and they built good stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that stuff still stands. But Asheville, when that stuff came in, this was long before Asheville was a green-haired, you know, we got to talk about pronouns place. They blocked the TVA flood control projects within their immediate area.
Hey, Carl, what do you say we dash for a hang on to that, because we're going to have about a 2-second break and come back for this number.
Yep.
And then we'll talk about that, because I'm curious as to what happened there. We'll be right, Ricky, give us about a 2-minute break and then maybe 1 minute, and we'll come right back.
2:54.
2:54. All right, give us a minute just so we can go over the numbers and then bring us back.
Understood.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Money.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 25. As if he was up 120. We were even higher than that. As Carl said, the number came out as 254. And the labor participation rate is 62.7. Unemployment rate dropped to 4.1 from 4.2. Carl, what do you see? And I'm looking at the households.
Chief, this is a rip-roaring hot number. And the Fed has just made a, as I pointed out, with, oh boy, is there trouble. The inflation reignition is going to happen. It is absolutely in this data, and good God.
I'm not giving you grief. So what? It's been going on for 20 years, and nobody seems to care or has the power to care.
Well, the idea that they were going to be supported by a reasonably soft, you know, not a collapsing labor market, but not a rip-snorting, you know, rip-your-face-off labor market, right? I mean, that was basically the premise. God help you, because last month on the non-adjusted household survey, we got two ticks. Now those are 600,000 jobs apiece on the employment population ratio. On top of that, we also got 700,000 ads.
Is that even remotely possible?
Yeah, it is. And oh, by the way, if you think that is something,
35,000 people a day.
Chief,
hired.
It also drove almost a half million people back onto the couch.
All right, here's now again, I'm looking at the A1, which a guy named Carl always tells me I shouldn't be looking at, but he also tells me
that's right.
If I look at it over year, the adjustment should peel out. So I'm
correct.
He tells
that's
me,
correct.
He tells me to debote these things. All right, so in the last year, if you were to take these hoi polloi numbers every month, and I'm assuming they're correct, all right, we've got to have in the last 12 months 3 million jobs created, 2.8, 2.7, somewhere in there?
Let's see.
It's got to be 200,000 a month, easy, times 12. It's, well, that's, what is that? 2.4 million. It's been over 200,000 most months. Anyway, so let's say 2.5 million. I look at the household survey since last September. Okay, we've got 800,000 more people in the labor force total, of which 300,000 are employed, 500,000 are unemployed, and oh, by the way, we've got 800,000 couch surfing or whatever they do. Those numbers don't begin to tell the same enthusiastic tale as these ones on TV.
No, and but here's the thing. So, you know, what I always say is that the only number that matters over 12 months is not just the change in employment, but the change in employment less the change in the employable population ratio. All right, because that's the health of the job market. Get down to it, right? That number has been negative, and strongly so, since last December, on a 12-month run basis, and still is. Okay, now is it trending the right way this month? Yeah, it is, and it is. It is trending the right way, and has been on a moving average basis for the last 4 or 5 months. However, it is still deeply negative. We're talking on a 12-month basis, 1.275 million negative. All right. But the problem right now is that you have nowhere around here, nowhere in this data table, do I see evidence of slack work, where we need to be stimulating further economic progress through, you know, through monetary policy or whatever have you, you know, whatever nonsense you want to come up with this. The index, the indices of average aggregate payrolls and hours and such are not suggesting any of this. Okay, there's no data there that says that this is in fact the case. And so this is a big problem, because you've got a huge issue with with the cost of living. Okay, we cannot absorb more of that. We're already trashing people who have gotten in over their gotten over their skis on that.
The people who are being trashed have zero voice.
Well, you get no argument from me there. All right, but the reality of it is that if you bifurcate this too far, you end up with an asset price collapse, because at the end of the day, people have to pay, they have to be able to buy things, or you don't have an economy.
You're talking about 1929.
I am talking about 1929, and then all of the, then trying to bail it out again, like we have done the last several times we've had a problem, and avoid a 1930 scenario, and all we've done is make it worse. And so, again, I go back, if you do not read history, you are doomed to repeat it. In 2021, we had a huge collapse that was caused by overspending, particularly in the railroad areas and the expansion westward and things like this. The nascent Federal Reserve at the time, and the government refused to do anything about it. It was Coolidge. And within 12 to 18 months, it had all cleared itself out and everything was okay. There was a serious period of suck for a short period of time. After 29, the government did the exact opposite, tried to protect everything that had gotten built up and had been bubbled. And as a result, we had a mess that only got exited when we ended up in a world war where everybody else's stuff got blown up. If we end up in a world war today, everybody's stuff's going to get blown up.
If you actually strip away the wheat from the chaff in this mealy-mouthed Federal Reserve guy that we have, if you actually waterboarded the dude and said, would you rather have 10% unemployment or a market go down 10%? I'm sure he'd say I'd rather have 10% unemployment.
Oh yeah. Well, it's, you know, but this is,
because they're not, those people, they don't have any power whatsoever.
No argument, Chief. No argument at all. But I mean, you know, it's this narrative that has been pushed that we are, you know, oh, there's, you know, there's no landing. There's a soft landing. There's a, you know, there's all this accelerate. Well, look, when you look at this data, on the unadjusted, just to tell you, give you an idea how massive this is, on the unadjusted, not seasonally adjusted number, the unemployment rate at the on the, in, from the household survey went from 4.4 to 3.9.
Well, I've got five ticks. In a household survey, I've got the amount of jobs up 430,000. That's a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, the official unemployment rate went down a tick, yeah. Right? The unadjusted unemployment rate went down five ticks.
But how would you guess? I mean, we're talking about short periods of time. You know, we've got 21 days in a month that you can do something with. You don't really hire right. A whole lot of people on the weekends. In the month of August, we're up 130,000 people. Right, dividing by 22. What are you talking about? 7,500 people a day,
right?
That you're hiring, and all of a sudden you click the clock over to the next month, and we're going to be hiring 15,000 people a day.
Well, it's
12. How does that? I mean, just mentally to me. Now, going back to like last April, if we weren't doing so hot, now we're doing better. I get it, but how does the clock tick that much on a 122 day period versus the next?
You know, I don't know, to tell you the truth.
But it's not like we hired.
No, I look. There's obviously sampling error in, you know, in all these surveys, right? And that's very real. But and there will be, I'm sure, I'm willing to bet that when we get off the air, I click on the, you know, the talking head stuff. That one of the things is going to be, oh, you know, the storms, it disrupt, you know, the data's wrong because the storms and the samples were wrong. Well, hey, I got news for you. The sample week was well before the storms.
Yeah.
All right. So anybody that tries to run that load of BS, you just give them the finger and walk out of the room because they're obviously lying.
But somebody somewhere in this survey, there has to be an industry, there has to be a business where somebody put together a huge auto plant or something, or a circuit plant, and all of a sudden it was done and they hired like 8,000 people last week or something. I mean, you need some numbers like that to get to this 400,000 number we're talking about here.
Well, here's the other, yeah, you want to, I mean, even more ridiculous in terms of, in the household survey, the unemployed number on an unadjusted basis went from 7.4 million to 6.5.
That's unreal. What sectors led the charge here?
Well, that's I got to dig around in the report, try to find this. Okay, but the I mean, if you look at the, you know, the total data here, that says, you know, where did we go here on the establishment side, says that food and drinking service places rose by 69,000 this last month. And healthcare was up 45. Now, I'm not so sure that I believe this, but you know, this is what they're saying. And by the way, construction up in September, which is rather interesting, because September is usually when that basically slacks off, right? Because we're getting into the fall and
yeah.
So I mean, that's, you know, as we get into the fall, that tends to slack off. And so I, you know, I'm kind of production non-supervisory employees over the last 12 months up, compensation up 4%. So I mean, you know, this, when you look at all of this, the data actually kind of looks, you know, this looks good. Production non-supervisory hours unch, manufacturing down one tick, a tenth of an hour on overtime. Okay, so you know, but this is not a weak. This is not a weak report that says we need stimulus out of the you know out of the government and the Fed at all. There's nothing in here that says that. Zero.
Well, your the ten year rate is now pushing 3.95. Ever since the chairman and the Fed came out and said they're going to rate lower interest rates, the 10 and 30 years going enough to go straight up. The 30 years now over 4.2, 4.23. It hasn't been that high. And this, I mean, if the 10 year gets over 4, that's as high as it's been in how much forever.
Well, here's the other thing that's interesting. So on the release of this data, my favorite inversion ratio, which is the TNX minus the IRX, all right? You know, everybody talks about twos and tens. I think the bill rate is the much more important one because that one's very sensitive to the Fed and their games. Well, I guess, you know, it's right on the short end of the curve, right? We haven't been above neg 5 for a very long time, and on the release of the number, we spiked to neg 4.73. Now, it has since come back in. It is now at neg 5.5, but even so, that's a significant breakout, and there is a former, high. I guess you could call it a high. I mean, it was a negative number, but it was set back in April, and if we close above that shelf, which is about neg 5.5, there is a very real possibility that we're going to see the curve return back to a positive slope. Now, that would not have been the case all the way back to the end of 2022. So if we were to see that happen, now, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, that's a great thing. Well, actually, it's not a great thing in that every time that you have had a situation like this where the curve's been inverted like this and then it's gone back positive, it's marked the start of a recession. All of them. And oh, by the way, this is the longest inversion since the Depression of the 1930s.
Actually, by the way, I was wrong on this 10-year. The 10-year was 4.5 last May in March. So we're heading back up that way. We dropped all the way down to 3.3.
Yeah, we're 3.934 right now.
Yeah.
That's where we're trading. It's up 2% of the day. But the other thing is the IRX is headed up, too. The IRX is positive right now on the day.
Well, somewhere there's a formula nobody's paid attention to for a couple of decades, is when you lend somebody money, you at least want to get the money back at the same value that when you gave it to somebody, plus something else.
You know, that hasn't been true for an awfully long time.
It sure
know?
Hasn't, but it's well, but you wonder when people are going to wise up, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know what part of the problem with all this, all the corruption and rent-seeking and garbage like that is And this goes back to, you know, some of the stuff we were talking about before the jump, right, and when the numbers came out. There's the whole thing with FEMA and, you know, and I was talking about the Starlink fiasco.
Yeah.
All right. Because
by the way, you know, quick question. Does the Hughes group and the Dish people that have internet on those, are they any good? And why would somebody need Starlink when you've got Dish or Hughes if they're decent?
The Dish and the Hughes people are okay. However, they use geostationary satellites. The latency is much higher as a result of that. And the capacity, the total addressable capacity is much lower because there's only so many slots.
Okay.
And so you can't just put up, you know, 400 more satellites because there aren't any slots. So there's a serious problem with that. That's the one. And the other thing is the latency is extremely high because of the distance. You know, speed of light is not a suggestion. So the thing that's interesting about this, though, is that when you look at what has happened here with infrastructure and the idiots that put it in places where it could be flooded and damaged, you know, fiber doesn't care if it gets wet. However, the power amplifiers that are necessary care very much when they get flooded, and so do the switches. But if FEMA had taken just a couple of million dollars out of the billions Well, okay, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration. My understanding is it's $800 million that they have redirected illegally.
The guy in Chicago is trying to run around looking for places as buddies to give the COVID money to. You think they could find something infrastructure like potholes or something they could spend it on?
Well, okay, so FEMA has diverted nearly $1 billion to all these migrants, which, by the way, is illegal, but Mayorkas did it anyway. It's FEMA is supposed to be there for disasters.
They diverted it to the people who are supposedly taking care of the migrants. You ask a migrant how much money he's got.
Well, yeah, supposedly. It went into people's pockets.
Right.
Okay. The problem is for a million, these terminals, these Starlink terminals, now they've been on sale. So, but even if you paid full price for them, they're $600 a piece. So what if you bought 1,000 of them? Well, that's $600,000, right? And you stick them in a warehouse. You don't turn them on right away because they're not needed. Then there's an emergency, and you take these 1,000 terminals and you blanket an area with usable Wi-Fi signal that is satellite connected. You have a little portable generator. Okay, so now we're talking $1,000 in installation. Little one kilowatt, one of those little Honda things that you can pick up with one hand. That's enough power to run the thing, and it sips gas. And you put those things all over the impacted area, and everybody's cell phone today can do Wi-Fi calling, and all of a sudden you have instantaneously restored communications over the entire impacted area. Now, you haven't done anything about the power problem. You haven't done anything about the water. The water is the first need, all right? But what you have done is now given everybody the ability to say, here's where I am. Here's right. where this problem is. Come do something, all right? And now you've got the ability to actually get information. And, oh, by the way, these idiots, especially in North Carolina, everyone after 9/11, all the police forces and fire and everything else, went off the old analog radios and onto trunked information systems that are all centrally controlled. And guess where they put the data center for it? In the floodplain. So now all of the cops and fire trucks can't talk to each other.
That's special.
All right. Now, if you put these things, now you would think for $1 million, all right, I mean, hey, listen, I'm not a rocket scientist, but I can figure this one out. $1 million, FEMA could have had 1,000 of these things. And where they and you know what? You turn the service on, it costs $150,000 for the month.
After 9/11, how much money was spent in the Patriot Act or another one where virtually every city was supposed to have, I tell the story so often, but the idea that if something bad happened, being a dirty bomb, being a chemical spill, be whatever right. it is, you were supposed to have the ability to evacuate 20, 30, 40,000 people and put them someplace that you planned in advance for a while.
Ha ha.
Well, I mean, the thing of it is, we did this once before, and I'm sure most of the people that are young enough listening have no idea what a fallout shelter is.
Yeah, I do.
You do. But they used to have things when we thought we were going to get nuked by the Russians. God, I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. We were doing the missile drills in the schools. You had to leave the class.
They were still doing duck and cover drills when I was in grade school.
The joke was, you went to the interior wall, you sat down in a hallway, you covered
your nuts.
So you put your head between your legs, and you kissed your butt goodbye. Exactly. But
that's right.
But when I got into the school board as a janitor, and then I became a custodian, I don't know what the hell the difference was. I was key personnel, and most of the schools were a fallout shelter. Subways right. were, because these schools were built
we had one in our junior high. The basement was a fallout shelter.
Yeah, but you'd walk in there, and maybe as in retrospect, as dumb as it was or whatever, if it said fallout shelter for 45 people, I'd open up the door, I'd walk in there, I'd turn on the light, I'd be the first person in there in 20 years, and there'd be, if there's 45 people, there's 45 cots. There's water for 45 people for, was it 30 days? They thought the fallout would last, right, or something?
Right.
For 40, and there was wafers for 45 people. Nobody, you didn't walk in and see somebody took half of them, and there's 20 of them in there, or there's none. The people who did the stuff, just whether it was a good idea or bad idea, they at least did it. I mean, I would.
Well, as I pointed out, all the dams that the TVA built 100 years ago. Okay, now these 100 years ago, every single one of them held.
Well, if you were going to do it in Chicago, me being the railroad duck that I am, you have a huge commuter rail system here, and we have a bunch of Amtrak cars.
Right.
Now, if all of a sudden you needed to move 20,000 people, there was a huge Army base, I think, or Air Force down in Rantoul, they close it. Well, if you actually were serious, you would leave the place open with 50 Butler buildings, who knows what those are, with 40,000 cots, and you'd be able to commandeer every railroad car and all the CTA buses, and you could get 40,000 people to Rantoul in 2 days if you needed to. There's no plan like that. But my question, not that you need it, Carl, but where did the money go? If you didn't spend if you say, Chief, you're out of your mind, you don't need to do that. Why would you even plan something like that? Okay, fine, but don't give somebody $40 million to plan it and have nothing to show for it.
Chief, this is emblematic of what our economy has become, and it's one of the reasons I rail about this stuff all the time. Okay, when it shows up in places that really screws someone bad to the point that they're going to get screwed dead if someone doesn't go in there and help them, it's when things like this happen. But the same sort of extraction racket is all over the place. I mean, now, it may have been a futile exercise in the event of an actual nuclear war, right? I mean, if there really was one, you survive the 30 days, and then you come out of the fallout shelter to a hellscape where you can't grow anything because the land has been polluted with radioactive material, right? you plant something and you can't eat it because you'll glow in the dark.
Have you ever seen a movie On the Beach?
Yeah, and you know what? Part of the problem is nobody really knows, because a lot of it is BS, but a lot of it isn't. And the biggest issue is actually not the weapons. It's the fact that they will hit things like the spent fuel pools at nuclear power reactors because we have stupidly done nothing about solving that problem. All right, and Carter was directly responsible for shutting that down.
If you put it off for another day, why do you solve it?
Well, that's right, and there's been deliberate political interference in that too. That is part of Carter's legacy that nobody ever wants to talk about. But the reality of it is that, at least you knew that it was going to be there for that period of time. Now, this particular situation is especially nasty, but on the other hand, it's not unprecedented. Everyone says it is. It's not. The Asheville area, that part of the mountain country, has flooded twice in the last 100 years, once in 1916 and again in I think it was 1940. The 1916 one was worse. But they were both bad. And the problem now is that we have gotten this idea in our head that you don't have to have any self-reliance. You can be a retiree on oxygen and live up in a mountain cabin somewhere and everything's fine. Well, I got news for you. That only works as long as your oxygen concentrator continues to work. And that requires electrical power.
That's a problem. Hey, we got like 1 minute. What's the lesson the Chinese have taught us all the last week? Government can create wealth whenever they want to. Don't worry.
Okay. We'll see. The grift, when you get down to it, Chief, the real problem here is that the grift siphons off so much of what is produced. You know what I mean? It's like this thing with communications. For $1 million, you could have had every single impacted area blanketed with working comms within 24 hours. That is no bullshit.
Well, we got a dash, but just remember, from way back in the day, the Great Society program, Lyndon Johnson, if he just would have taken the cash, divided it by the amount of poor people, and sent him a check, we wouldn't have had any poor people.
That didn't work out so good either, did it?
No, but he didn't do that. They had a million programs that all got siphoned off.
Well, but we're still doing it. All we're doing, all it is a grift and a steal. And then when you really need it not to be,
and we're pissed,
everything seems okay.
And we're pissed we're not one of the guys along the way. Just think how much better I'd be doing. I mean, I love what I do. I'm doing fine. The firm's doing good. Imagine how much better I'd be if I was a community organizer.
Oh, imagine how much better I'd be if I was one of those guys that had figured out how to run a water plant at the precise moment when I could manage to make everybody die for the first 72 hours and then collect all the cash.
Well, God. On that note, have a nice weekend, bud. Well, gorgeous weather here. We're like 72, no low humidity, sun every day. This is Chicago.
Oh, we're gonna get the really nice here fairly soon too. It's cloudy right now, but the stupid is gone and we're now into the nice part of the year.
Well, good for you. SP Futures up 52. We love this report. And by the way, it's a really good report. NASDAQ Futures up 265. 30-year and 10-year bond rates are way up. We nobody seems to care about that. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.